and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, March 20, 2024. The UN is warning that Sudan's conflict has led to an escalation in violence against civilians in Darfur,
including widespread cases of sexual and gender-based violence in the conflict across Darfur, particularly in the West Darfur.
And casual workers in South Sudan defy heat wave warnings.
I come here at 8 in the morning to look for something to eat and only to return home at 6 in the evening. The sun is too hot, but we are working in it here to find something for food.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The governments of Norway, the United Kingdom, and the United States have called on South Sudan's leaders to take urgent steps to ensure genuine and peaceful elections are held in December 2024. The Troika statement released Wednesday warns that not taking these critical steps and so not allowing elections would be a collective failure on the part of the South Sudanese leaders. End of quote. The statement further urged South Sudan's transitional government of national unity to use public revenue in a transparent manner to address public needs, including funding electoral institutions. Some South Sudanese living in the capital, Juba, are defying warnings about excessive temperatures in order to feed their families. One casual worker says he is working during the dangerous heat wave to feed his children. Another janitor who says staying in the shade with empty stomach is more harmful than working in the extreme heat. Manyang David Meyer spoke to some casual workers at Konyokonyo Market and has this report from Juba.
...30-year-old Bona Bolnun is a porter at Juba's Konyokonyo Market. He says he's ready to work during the current heat wave, with temperatures ranging from 38 degrees Celsius to 42 degrees Celsius, so he can put food on the table.
I come here at 8 in the morning to look for something to eat and only to return home at 6 in the evening. The sun is too hot, but we are working in it here to find something for food. If I choose to stay in the shade, I will not be able to eat. I feel some headache at the end of the day, but there is nothing I can do. If I choose to stay in the shade, I will feel hungry. But if we have work, we can get something to eat and help us sleep.
Bol says he makes around 20,000 South Sudanese pounds a day from carrying goods in his wheelbarrow under Juba's scorching sun. 40-year-old Jumalado, a janitor at Konyokonyo Market, says he is determined to provide food for his family regardless of the weather in Juba.
There is no way to survive in Juba unless you do some work for you to get some pay. I am responsible for a number of people at home, my wife, my children, my sisters as well. And we are living like this. The sun is hot, but there is nothing we can do. If you sit in the shade, you will get nothing.
Unlike Lado, Banduya Solo, another janitor in Juba, says after working for many days in the heat, he became ill and was diagnosed with typhoid fever. He says he suspects the heat wave is to blame for his illness.
They told me it is the sun heat that brought this illness. I have a wife here in Juba with a child. Sometimes I get 7,000 South Sudanese pounds a day from my wheelbarrow. I cannot sit at home when I know things are expensive in the market. I come here to look for money and send it home.
Last week, South Sudan Ministries of Health and Environment issued an advisory to Juba residents to stay safe as temperatures reach as high as 43 degrees Celsius. Authorities advise people to stay indoors, avoid direct sunlight and vigorous activities, and stay hydrated by drinking a lot of water. They also recommend finding air-conditioned rooms for cooling. On Wednesday, the United Nations Weather Agency sounded a red alert on global warming, saying 2023 experienced the highest temperatures on record. The UN says there is a high probability that 2024 will be as hot as 2023. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
A report by the World Meteorological Organization presents an ominous picture of what lies ahead for Earth if urgent action is not taken to stop what appears to be an inevitable march towards surpassing a key global warming threshold. The WMO's State of Global Climate Report issued Tuesday in Geneva, Switzerland, said 2023 was the hottest year on record, with carbon dioxide levels 50% higher than the pre-industrial era. Cleste Salo, WMO's Secretary General, said she is sounding the red alert because the long life of carbon in the atmosphere means temperatures will continue to rise. She pointed out a glimmer of hope with renewable energy surging. At the United Nations Security Council on Tuesday, the chairperson of the Council's Committee for Sudan highlighted an escalation in violence against civilians in Darfur and ongoing violations of the 2004 arms embargo in the troubled region. Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
South Korean diplomat Hwang Jong-kook presented the Sudan Committee's findings, emphasizing reports of alleged violations of international humanitarian and human rights laws by warring parties in Darfur.
In both the final and the quarterly reports, the panel updated the committee on increasing violence against civilians, including widespread cases of sexual and gender-based violence in the conflict across Darfur, particularly in the West Darfur. The panel reported on violations of the arms embargo, violations of international humanitarian and human rights law, ethnically based recruitment by the warring parties, complex financing schemes established by armed groups active in Darfur.
Sudan's conflict erupted in April last year, with the Sudan Armed Forces battling the paramilitary group the Rapid Support Forces. The United Nations, United States, and other governments have condemned the reports of ethnic killings in West Darfur against the Masalit tribe, reminiscent of the Darfur conflict from 20 years ago. The UN imposed an arms embargo on Sudan in 2004 during that violence in Darfur, with then-US Secretary of State Colin Powell declaring genocide in Darfur. Some parts of Darfur is now primarily under the control of the RSF, accused of atrocities against civilians, which it denies. During Tuesday's Security Council session, U.S. Ambassador Robert A. Wood expressed concern over the report's findings.
We remain concerned by reporting of blatant violations of the U.N. arms embargo, particularly the scale and frequency of the transit of weapons into Darfur from eastern Chad, Libya, and the Central African Republic. We are committed to sharing information on such transfers with the CAR and Sudan panels and urge other member states to facilitate UN sanctions panels carrying out their mandates. We call on all member states and warring parties to fully comply with the arms embargo measures. External parties that provide materiel support to the warring parties in violation of the arms embargo are complicit in the loss of thousands of lives and the devastation of countless more.
Speaking to the Security Council, Ammar Mohammed Mahmoud, Sudanese diplomat at the country's permanent mission to the UN, argued for the lifting of sanctions related to arms transfers to Darfur.
Putting an end to the sanctions would allow the Sudanese government to better protect its civilians and would allow the Sudanese armed forces to deal effectively in facing and ending the violations perpetrated by the Rapid Support Militias and the atrocities that they have have been perpetrating against civilians, children, and women, and their systematic destruction of infrastructure, public facilities, civilian assets, and private property.
Sudan has repeatedly demanded the lifting of the arms embargo and related sanctions from the 2003-2004 Darfur conflict, arguing that Darfur has overcome the state of war and previous security and political challenges. The Security Council approved a resolution a year ago renewing the embargo and sanctions, but also indicated it could review the sanctions based on progress in Sudan's transitional security arrangements and the National Action Plan for Civilian Protection. In Washington, I'm Nabil Biyaj.
From Washington, we move to New York, where migrant crisis in the city, which began nearly 2 years ago with an influx of Venezuelans and other Latin Americans, has seen a tripling in the number of migrants from West African nations in the past year alone. Aaron Ranyain reports from New York City.
In the New York neighborhood of Harlem, a group of West African migrants comes together at a nearby restaurant to relish traditional African dishes. This enclave, known as Little Senegal, warmly receives these newcomers, many of whom have faced arduous journeys in criminal gangs to arrive at this juncture. Mamadou came from Senegal. He asked to withhold his last name while his migration status is pending. He says he went from Morocco to Spain to El Salvador to Nicaragua to Mexico. He says traffickers along the way would put a gun to migrants' heads demanding money. If you don't have money, they take everything from you. It's very difficult, he says. Upon arrival in the United States, many encounter harsh living conditions and, quite often, unfulfilled expectations. Mamadou Dramé is the president of the Association of Senegalese Americans.
Everybody probably think when you, before you come to America, you think this is a place to be. The expectation for these migrants is we're going to America to better our lives. And that's our truth is when they come, it's a whole different story.
These migrants are required to undergo a waiting period of 90 to 150 days before they can be authorized to pursue employment, causing significant uncertainty for many. This recent arrival from Senegal chose not to disclose his name as he seeks a work permit.
We are here to tell you about our problem. We just want to work. We want working permits so we can work, and we will all disperse.
In their pursuit of the American dream, these migrants also find themselves caught up in the political landscape, especially with former President Donald Trump's aggressive stance against migrants who have come to the U.S. illegally. Mamadou Dramé is the president of the Association of Senegalese Americans.
But most of them have concern about what Trump is saying, especially talking about mass deportation. They're pretty concerned about that. So they're definitely aware of the political situation in the U.S. right now.
State Senator Cordell Clear is a Democrat representing West Harlem in New York City. She holds the view that the migrant issue transcends party lines and more help is needed from federal authorities.
We need to band together and do is make sure states like New York State, who's absorbed so much of this, get some funding from the federal government.
As the election season kicks off and the hurdles confronting these newly arrived migrants capture the media spotlight, what remains steadfast is their aspiration for improved livelihoods, particularly with the backing of the Little Senegal community. Aaron Rainin, VOA News, New York City.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how does instability give birth to mental health problems? Stay tuned to an answer for that question after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. And our words of wisdom for today comes from West Nile District in northern Uganda.
I'm called Jafar Bashir from Arua, Uganda. There's a proverb says in our language of Lugwara, says Tio Opi Ambambari Matile Malesio. It means a cow which cries too much doesn't have milk.
Yeah, indeed. I lived in West Nile District in Arua, and my shock was we were invited for an occasion and we were given tea with sweet potatoes. When I asked for sugar, they told me the sweet potatoes is their sugar. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. In eastern part of Democratic Republic of Congo, there are about 800,000 people living in refugee camps near the city of Goma. Medical officials working here say many are suffering from mental issues. The medical group Medicine Sans Frontiers, or MSF, is doing what they can to help. VOA's Zanim Net Zaidi reports.
At Chabindu Camp outside Goma, Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, has set up tents where dozens of displaced persons are being processed. They can also participate in listening sessions with psychologists. Rose has been receiving care for depression. She blames the war for her mental state, but says her journey to recovery has begun. Rose, an internally displaced woman, says that when individuals escape from war, they experience great distress. Today, she is learning techniques to let go of our past and to find peace within ourselves. Rose is not alone. According to MSF, living in camps around Goma is a challenging environment for the hundreds of thousands of displaced people, especially women. Every day, medical staff say about 70 female survivors of sexual assault visit the 6 MSF health facilities in camps near Goma. Hakizimana, the leader of the Bulengo camp for displaced individuals, remarks that a significant portion of the displaced population in this camp, exceeding 100 individuals, grapple with mental health issues.
When we looked into the real problem, we found out that many have been disturbed by the horrors of war and others have been raped when they look for wood in the forests, which is why so many women here suffer of mental illness.
Mulekia, a psychologist working with MSF, states that the majority of individuals we assist exhibit symptoms of anxiety and post-traumatic issues.
We run 3 group sessions a day, and each group is made up of 10 people, for a total of 30 people a day. If it goes on like this, we'll need to expand the activities to try and meet as many of the needs as possible.
Psychosocial care is available to both genders, but officials say most of the people taking advantage of the services are women whose mental health challenges are impacting their ability to care for their children. Zanem Netizaidi, VOA News, Goma.
From Democratic Republic of Congo, we move to West Africa, where journalists in Nigeria are leading efforts to hold public officials accountable through a Center for Journalism Innovations and Development Initiative. Reporters investigate public infrastructure projects and spread the news about community resources. Timothy Obiezu has more from Abuja.
James Akpashe arrives for a checkup at the community medical center in Dadere, but it's not for his health. The student journalist is there to see how well the government-run center in Nigeria's central Nasarawa state is working. It's part of an initiative called Udeme, an Ibibio word for my share. It sends student journalists known as U-monitors to investigate public projects and hold authorities accountable. Akwashi has been a U-monitor since last April.
Sometimes you travel to those communities where those projects have been awarded. You discover that those residents don't want to talk to you because they have no idea of those projects. So you face challenges, maybe sometimes threats to your life. And when a lawmaker find out or individual find out you are doing a story that will implicate him.
The Media Nonprofit Center for Journalism, Innovation and Development, or CJID, launched Udeme in 2018. It recruits about 100 students like Akbashi each year. They track public infrastructure projects like the construction of schools and hospitals. And they talk to residents about what they find. Ijoma Okereke Adagba is a program manager with Udeme.
So our U-monitors are fluent in the local dialect in those places. So when they go on radio shows, they speak in those local dialects so that people can understand the relevance of the topic that we're talking about. And we see them calling in after the program.
Nigeria ranks 145th out of 180 countries on the Transparency International Corruption Perceptions Index. The CJID says ignorance is often why public officials are not held accountable. At a visit to Nigeria's Independent Corrupt Practices Commission in February, authorities pledged their support. Clifford Okparodu is the secretary of Nigeria's Independent Corrupt Practices Commission.
The issue of corruption and corrupt practices is a problem. We will always continue to work with you.
CJID says its approach brings change and could be a model other media should follow. The initiative brings results. When Akbashi first visited this health center, it was not operational. A few months after he reported on it, the government opened the hospital to the community, a small step to holding public officials accountable. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
From Abuja, we come back here in the United States, where the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, says the United States remains determined to provide Ukraine with the resources to fight Russian aggression, even as the U.S. Congress has failed to pass supplemental aid for Ukraine. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb traveled to Ramstein Air Base in Germany with the Secretary.
The United States will not let Ukraine fail.
It was the first in-person meeting of the Ukraine Defense Contact Group this year, and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin made it clear that Ukraine was too important to let down.
Today, Ukraine's survival is in danger, and America's security is at risk, and they don't have a day to waste, and we don't have a day to spare either.
But analysts say Austin's audience was likely skeptical, since the U.S. Congress has yet to pass new aid for Ukraine. Retired Army Colonel Miles Kagans is a non-resident senior fellow with the Washington-based think tank New Lines Institute.
The money is out. Ukraine is still trying to wrest Russian troops out of its eastern territory. And there seems to be on the ground a tactical stalemate.
With the Pentagon out of money for Ukraine and no sign the Republican-led House will bring a funding bill to a vote, senior defense officials say there just isn't a way that allies can combine forces to make up for a lack of U.S. support, especially as Russia ramps up its attacks.
It's not conventional warfare that beat back Russia's blitzkrieg. It was Ukrainian guerrilla warfare.
Critics like Sean McFate, the author of The New Rules of War, say the international community is investing too much money on expensive military weapons that fall short in today's fight.
Giving them more conventional war weapons is the strategic definition of insanity, expecting a different result by doing the same thing. So I think that it's time for Ukraine to stop thinking about a conventional war strategy, which they'll never win against Russia, and think about unconventional ways they can leverage their power.
Western leaders, including Secretary Austin, have expressed concern that a failure to supply Ukraine will play into Russia's hands as it tries to outlast Western support to Ukraine. McFaith says Ukrainians should use some conventional forces to hold the line while its guerrilla forces fight to break down the Russian bear. Carla Babb, VOA News, Ramstein Air Base, Germany.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. We now leave you with Lomerica Jazz Band and the song Salam Ya Sudan. Listening to Lomerica Jazz Band and the song Salam Ya Sudan, which means peace. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Rob McLean, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.